Hello, everyone. It's good to be back in the upper part of the state. It's good occasionally to go down and to see what's down there and see the way things change. It's been a while since I've been down there, and it's almost like in places that I didn't know where I was at. And then I would come up on something that I remembered and would see it that way. But we had a good time and a good fellowship with my son and grandson and a friend from Anderson that's a good Christian Baptist guy, and we had a good time. We're going to start tonight, and this is study 14, and the study tonight is, or the date is the 7th day of November, and I know what happened tomorrow a few years ago. This date years ago, but we'll leave that to a little bit later. But 11:7-18, and this is study 14, and we stopped off at verse 7 in chapter 8 of Hebrews, and I want to finish up the 8th chapter, and then before we get into the 9th chapter, we want to go back to Deuteronomy and do some reading, because it really tells us about the things that were happening when they built the tabernacle and so on there. So we're dealing with the efficiency of Christ's priesthood, and also the fact that Jeremiah, you know, said that God would establish a more excellent ministry later on, and Jeremiah told us about this, and we're going to read some of the quotes from Jeremiah and the rest of Hebrews 8, because a lot of it is about four or five verses out of Jeremiah, I think. And so I want to read 7 again in the 8th chapter of Hebrews, and then we'll finish this up, and then we'll get involved with that in Deuteronomy before we get in to chapter 9. And it says, "For if the first covenant had been faultless, then should no place have been sought for a second covenant, if you will." So it says 4, and this is the reason for the 4 there. If that first covenant had been faultless, or could have made one blameless, then, and your Bible says should, I like to use the word would, then would no place, and no place there is something that would have been left out completely. But it wasn't left out completely. But then would no place have been sought for the second covenant. Or a new covenant, if you will. Then we get to verse 8. In verse, like I say, there's several verses here that deals with a quote there from Jeremiah 31. And it says, the old and new covenants here are compared and contrasted. So Paul is making the thought to these Hebrew people that a change has come about. God has made a change from the normal way that he's been doing things, and he gives reasons for it. So he don't just leave us in the lurch and say, well, God changed his mind. He didn't really change his mind because it had been foretold years ago, long years ago, that when everything was in place, that there would be new things come along. And even the mystery, you know, as we go, was going to come along also. But here he's dealing with these people and telling them again. And he has told them even before in chapter 7 in the first part of 8, that even you had need for someone to teach you about God and his plan and purpose. And so here we go. It says, for finding fault with them or with the covenants that had been made, he said, behold, the day comes, saith the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. Here, what strikes me immediately is he's going to do it with all of his people and not just part of his people, because he's talking about Judah and talking about Israel here both. Okay, so it's whatever he's making the point to, which was Christ Jesus, was for all of God's people, not just part of them. He says, for finding fault with them, he said, and this is a quote from Jeremiah 31, verses 31 through 34, and it is a prophecy. Paul here presents it in this early ministry here, because I think he hadn't written but maybe two or three epistles early in his early ministry before he did this one. So he says there, behold, or look to see, to call to attention to the words given to Jeremiah. He says, the day cometh, saith the Lord, when I, the Lord, will make, and that means to consummate or to complete, a new covenant or a new agreement with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah, as both will be one again in that sense.
Because it makes you wonder how these churches that say, well, we're a new covenant church.
Yeah.
Where is their claim in that?
Yeah.
Unless you're of the house of Israel or of the house of Judah.
Yeah.
I guess they ignore that part.
Yeah. It's not that important.
Very convenient.
It's not that important.
Yeah.
Many of them. It says, not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day when I took them by the hand to lead them out of the land of Egypt, because they continued not in my covenant, and I regarded them not, saith the Lord. There was a time when they had left God out of their life and out of the picture, and so when they done that to him, he didn't regard them. He kind of turned his back on them in a sense. But yet, he didn't ever forget them. Let's see. And he led them out through Moses. And by his hand and by his will to lead them out or away from that part of the earth that we call Egypt. because they continue not in God's covenant or the agreement that God had made with his children, with those that he chose. And he says, and he could say, and I regarded them not, saith the Lord. And it certainly and never is not good to be regarded by God this way. It is absolutely not good, because when he kind of turns his attention from them, then they are on their own. And they were supposed to be in God's stead all the time. They were chosen to do that God wanted them to do. And when they didn't do it, then he is like many other parents. When your children don't do what you're supposed to do, they're still your children, but they're not in your good grace in that sense. In verse 10, says this, for this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. So Paul is telling these Hebrews here, listen up, this is what I'm going to do with the house of Israel. After those days, saith the Lord, I will put my law in their mind. I will put my law in their mind and write them in their hearts. I will be to them a God, and they shall be to me a people. So, he says, for this is the covenant that I will make, that now this is what I'm going to do to Israel. Both parts is one. He says, I will put, or literally give, my laws into, and that means to put or place those laws in their mind, and epigrapho, and write. Epigrapho them in their hearts, to where their inner being and their mind is going to know that. And I will be to them a God, and they shall be to me a people. And verse 11. In verse 11, I made a note there and said, this he wrote or spake to the nation of Israel. And they shall not teach every man his neighbor and every man his brothers, saying, know the Lord, for all shall know me, from the least to the greatest. The teaching each other would be a godly teaching, and it would be put in their minds and in their hearts, and they wouldn't have to share it with each other. But they could share it with the world. But you see, the law kind of was I don't know the word to use. It was something that stood between them and truly saying what they really should say to others that weren't of their nation concerning what God was doing, because they didn't truly understand it anyway during the time of the law. They understood what they had to do, but they didn't really understand, I don't think, how it impacted them.
I don't think they could see that the law as Paul's, Peter and Paul once said the law was a taskmaster.
Yeah.
To bring them to Christ.
Yeah.
And the yoke that, you know, he said, why would you want to put a yoke on them that neither we nor our fathers were able
right.
to bear?
So there was always something there, a barrier there, I guess, if you will.
Yeah.
And the further they got away from God, the greater the wall got or the barrier got. And they just couldn't do what they were supposed to in that sense. And we'll get.
How long of a span was this that they were?
Well,
my apologies.
Okay, we left off at the end of verse 11. And we'll pick up with verse 12 of Hebrews 8. It says, for I will be merciful unto their righteousness and their sins and their iniquities I will remember no more. So, this was what Jeremiah was teaching to those way back years and years before, Christ came in person to the world. And so this is, he says, for I, the Lord, will be merciful unto the unrighteousness, the adikia, and their sins. And I think in the Greek that hamathia, and their iniquities, their evil intent. He says, I will remember no more. And so we get down to 13 to where we come to a full stop. He says, in that he, the Lord, saith a new covenant, full stop. He has made a new covenant. And they should understand what Paul is saying. It is new now. He hath made the first old. If he made a new one, that makes the first one out of date. It went bye-bye. So when you read the first verse of 13, we see that now it has been told to Jeremiah, and now Paul is using it again to these people that now Christ has come and done that finished work on the cross. He gave his blood, and that he took the sins of man, and so now it is new. That is new because he has done that work to make these things new and to fulfill what was written in Jeremiah 31 and what Jeremiah said in 31 there. So the old is gone, and now that which decayeth, he says in 13, and that's to be made old or to rot away. And waxeth old, he says, is ready to vanish away. So anything that's done away with, if it's not used, it's going to expire or it's going to go away. And so the old covenant now, the old things that they were told, now there's new things that was done by the finished work of Christ, and that nullifies the old things. Because what Christ done with his blood took care of many of the old things that concerned the law. that. And so he gets right down to that point, and so he stops and makes a point there that it's gone. And so we get to the ninth chapter of Hebrews, and we got to go back and do some reading. And I believe we can get it in so we can start the ninth chapter next week. But let's go back to Deuteronomy 25, the 25th chapter of Deuteronomy. Thought I had it marked. I probably did have it marked and used my marker somewhere there. Okay. Sorry about that. My best laid plans don't always work the way I like to. Okay, Deuteronomy 25, and we're going to start with 1. Is that what I'm looking for? Deuteronomy 25, 1-26, 37. Or 26 ain't got 37.
About
missed. Maybe it was Exodus. Exodus 25, I'm sorry. I don't know why I put Deuteronomy. Okay. This is the deal that Moses went the fourth ascent up on the mountain to get the pattern that God was going to burn into his mind to make the tabernacle. And if you were at our conference last year, when Mikey...
Earlier this year.
Okay, earlier this year, okay. Then Mikey, took on the thing of kind of explaining the tabernacle, which, you know, takes a bunch of understanding to realize what was put into this thing. And I applaud him for giving it the try. But when I sit down here and read this, then I realize that was one hard thing that he did. But I appreciate it because I kind of got a glimpse of how the thing was set up in a picture form that I could kind of see to understand. And I thank him for doing that.
And the scale of it, how big it was.
Yeah, and how big it truly was. Yeah. And so we're gonna read this because we're gonna go back and it's gonna explain it somewhat in chapter 9 of Hebrews. And the Lord spake unto Moses saying, this is Exodus 25:1. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, that they bring me an offering of every man that giveth it willingly with his heart, ye shall take my offering. And this is the offering which ye shall take of them, gold and silver and brass, and blue and purple and scarlet and fine linen, and goat's hair. and ram skins, dyed red, and badger skins, and shittim wood. Oil for the light, spices for the anointing oil, and for sweet incense, onyx stones, and stones to be set in the ephod and in the breastplate. That's was the ephod, the breastplate of Aaron, the high priest that was going to be there doing that. And let them make me a sanctuary, that I may dwell among them, according to all that I show thee, after the pattern of the tabernacle, and the pattern of all the instruments thereof, even so shall ye make it. So this is what he laid on Moses' fourth trip up the mountain. Okay, here we go. And they shall make an ark of shittim wood, 2 cubits and a half shall be the length thereof, and 1.5 cubits the breadth thereof, and 1.5 cubits the height thereof. So, you know, every time we talk about an ark, we talk about a chest. You know, the ark that carried the animals was like God's chest, where he put all these things that he wanted to keep alive in this ark that Noah had built. And it was a chest that was going to float on the water and keep them alive for the duration that they were going to be on the water. Well, here we got an ark, and he's telling him how to make this ark. And thou shalt overlay it with pure gold, within and without, shall thou overlay it, and shall make upon it a crown of gold round about. And thou shalt cast 4 rings of gold for it, and put them in the 4 corners thereof, and 2 rings shall be in the one side of it, and 2 rings in the other side of it. See, they were going to have to fold all this stuff up in this thing and carry it with them. And so these rings were the places where they run the rods through to carry it.
Because you couldn't touch it.
Yeah, and they couldn't touch it. And thou shalt make staves of shittim wood and overlay them with gold, and thou shalt put the staves in the rings by the side of the ark, that the ark may be borne with them. The staves shall be in the rings of the ark, and they shall not be taken from it. And thou shalt put into the ark the testimony which I shall give thee. And thou shalt make a mercy seat of pure gold. 2.5 cubits shall be the length thereof, and 1.5 cubits the breadth. And thou shalt make 2 cherubims of gold, of beaten work, shalt thou make them in the 2 ends of the mercy seat, and make 1 cherubim on the one end, and on the other cherubim on the other end. Even of the mercy seat shall you make the cherubims on the 2 ends thereof. And the cherubims shall stretch forth their wings on high, covering the mercy seat one to another. Toward the mercy seat shall the faces of the cherubims be. And thou shalt put the mercy seat above upon the ark, and in the ark thou shalt put the testimony that I shall give thee. And there I will meet with thee, and I will commune with thee from above the mercy seat, from between the 2 cherubims which are upon the ark of the testimony, of all the things which I will give thee in commandment unto the children of Israel. Thou shalt also make a table of shittim wood. So he goes from the ark to the table. 2 cubits shall be the length thereof, and 1 cubit the breadth thereof, and 1.5 cubits the height. And thou shalt overlay it with pure gold, and make thereto a crown of gold round about, and thou shalt make unto it a border of a handbreadth round about, and thou shalt make a golden crown to the border thereof round about. And thou shalt make it four rings of gold, and put the rings in the four corners that are on the 4 feet thereof. Over against the border shall the rings be for places of the staves to bear the table. So all these things were made that it could be carried by the Levites. Okay? And thou shalt make the staves of shittim wood, verse 28, and overlay them with gold that the table may be borne with them. And thou shalt make the dishes thereof, the spoons thereof, and covers thereof, and bowls thereof, to cover withal of pure gold thou shalt make them. And thou shalt set upon the table showbread before me always. I don't know how often they changed the showbread, but it was required of God that it be there. And thou shalt make a candlestick of pure gold of beaten work, shall the candlestick be made. His shaft and branches, his bowl, his knops, and his flowers shall be of the same. And six branches shall come out of the sides of it, three branches of the candlestick out of one side, and three branches of the candlestick out of the other side. Three bowls made like unto almonds with a knob, and a flower in one branch, and three bowls made like almonds in the other branch with a knob and a flower. So in the six branches that come out of the candlestick. And in the candlestick shall be four bowls made like unto almonds with their knobs and their flowers. And there shall be a knob under two branches of the same, and a knob under two branches of the same, and a knob under two branches of the same, according to the six branches that proceed out of the candlestick. So all these were given to Moses with exact measurements. When he come off the mount, he knew how to make them, just like the pattern that was in heaven. Their knops and their branches shall be of the same, and it all shall be of one beaten work of pure gold. And there shall make the seven lamps thereof, and they shall light the lamps thereof, that they may give light over against it. And the tongs thereof, and the snuff dishes thereof, shall be made of pure gold, and of a talent of pure gold shall he make it with all these vessels. And look, that thou maketh them after the pattern which was showed thee in the mount. So when God showed it to Moses, it was burning into his mind, like when he looked, he was looking at a blueprint. He didn't have to roll up one. It was in his mind. And so you get the ark, the table, and the lampstand in that part of the reading. And how we're doing on time. Okay. Let's look at chapter 26, because it talks about the curtains, the coverings, the board, the veil, the hanging for the door. That's the construction part of it and how it's supposed to be. So it talks about making these things, about fabricating all this out of the gold and the things that would be given by the people that brought that gold out with them from Egypt, because they took all the gold of Egypt at that time to come out with them, because the people were wanting to get rid of them. They said, you know, get out of here. We'll give you all what we got. And I think that's why Pharaoh come after him. And he died in the Red Sea because I think he was going after, not so much after the people, but I think he was going after his wealth. And he didn't make it. And he didn't get the wealth back either. So they had all this stuff in their possession to make this thing, and they brought it through the wilderness with them. Okay, moreover, thou shalt make the tabernacle with 10 curtains of fine twined linen, blue, purple, scarlet, with cherubims of cunning works shall thou make them. The length of one curtain shall be 8 and 20 cubits, and the breadth of one curtain shall be 4 cubits, and every one of the curtains shall have 1 measure. So all 4 of the curtains are going to be alike in size. And 5 curtains shall be coupled together one to another, and other 5 curtains shall be coupled one to another, and thou shalt make loops of blue upon the edge of one curtain from the selvage of the coupling, and likewise shall thou make it to the uttermost edge of another curtain in the coupling of the second. 50 loops shall thou make in one curtain, 50 loops shall thou make in the edge of the curtain, that is, in the coupling of the second, that the loops may take hold one of another. And thou shalt make 50 tatches of gold, and couple the curtains together with the tatches, and it shall be one tabernacle. So a tabernacle is a basically a tent in this sense. But it had, when it was put up and erected, it had stages where all these things that we talked about they were going to make was behind these curtains. And only some of them could go so far through these curtains or doors, and then only the high priest could go, you know, into the Holy of Holies, which was where that altar type thing was with the cherubims up over the mercy seat. Okay.
That would be. Well, all this material that they, and the gold is not light.
No, well, they.
And they broke this down. Every time they broke camp, they broke all this down.
And it's, and carried it. It had all these things, all these components had to be there together in order for this thing to work. And it says in verse 7, thou shalt make curtains of goat hair to be a covering upon the tabernacle. 11 curtains shall thou make. The length of one curtain shall be 30 cubits, the breadth of one curtain 4 cubits, and the 11 curtains shall be of all of one measure. So you see, the undertaking to build this thing, and these people coming out of the wilderness, you know, had to be.
See why you had to have seamstresses and weavers and metalworker.
All this stuff. Yeah. In verse 9, thou shalt couple 5 curtains by themselves and 6 curtains by themselves, and shall double the 6 curtains in the forefront of the tabernacle. And all this was done for a reason. It was for a reason.
Patterned after the tabernacle.
Yeah. And thou shalt make 50 loops on the edge of one curtain, that is the outmost of the coupling, and 50 loops in the edge of the curtain, which coupleth with the second. Thou shalt make 50 tatches of brass, and put tatches in the loops, and couple the tent together that it may be one. And the remnant that remaineth of the curtains of the tents, the half curtains that remaineth, shall hang over the backside of the tabernacle. And a cubic on the one side, and a cubic on the other side of that which remaineth, and the length of the curtains of the tent it shall hang over the sides of the tabernacle on this side and on that side to cover it. And thou shalt make a covering for the tent of ram skins, dyed red, and a covering above of badger skins. So whenever they made the and put the curtains up, they covered the top of it with these skins because, to keep it dry. And badger skins and ram skins. And thou, verse 15, and thou shalt make boards of the tabernacle of shittim wood standing up. 10 cubits shall be the length of a board, and a cubic and a half shall be the breadth of one board. 2 tenons shall there be in one board set in order against the other. Thus shall thou make for all the boards of the tabernacles. Because everything had to fit and come together. And thou shalt make the boards of the tabernacle 20 boards on the south side southward. And thou shalt make 40 sockets of silver under the 20 boards, 2 sockets under one board for his tenons, and 2 sockets under the other board for his 2 tenons. And for the second side of the tabernacle, on the north, there shall be 20 boards. And again, 40 sockets of silver, 2 sockets under one board, 2 sockets under another board. And for all the sides of the tabernacle, westward, they shall make 6 boards. 2 boards shall they make for the corners of the tabernacle of the 2 sides, and they shall be coupled together beneath, and they shall be coupled together above the head of it unto 1 ring. Thus shall it be for them both, and they shall be for the 2 corners. There shall be 8 boards, and their sockets of silver, 16 sockets, 2 sockets under one board, 2 sockets under the other board. And they shall make bars of shittim wood, 5 for the boards on one side of the tabernacle, and 5 bars for the boards on the other side of the tabernacle, and 5 bars for the boards on the side of the tabernacle for the 2 sides westward. And the middle bar in the middle of the board shall reach from end to end. And they shall overlay the boards with gold and make their rings of gold or places for the bars. And they shall overlay the bars with gold. And thou shalt rear up the tabernacle according to the fashion thereof which was shown thee in the mount. So when you pitch a tent, you've got to get it ready, put the parts together, raise it up in the middle.
And all these tenons and sockets and everything that designed into it.
Yeah, and they use different metals for different parts of that thing.
Materials. Mm-hmm.
Okay? And it says in 31, and they shall make a veil of blue and purple and scarlet and fine twine linen of cunning work with cherubims shall it be made, and they shall hang it up. The 4 pillars of shittim wood overlaid with gold, their hooks shall be of gold upon the 4 sockets of silver. And thou shalt hang up the veil under the tatches that they may spring in thither within the veil of the ark of the testimony, and the veil shall divide unto you between the holy place and the most holy. So all that inside, They had to use these curtains to block it off, because it was a situation that prevented anyone from going in there that wasn't supposed to be in there. So they had doors to this thing where you could go in the front, and people, the Levites could go, in front of that first curtain. But when these dividers were put in there, then they couldn't go any further back And they were supposed to go. Yeah. Yeah.
But
if
they did.
Yeah. It was too bad.
Yeah.
And thou shalt put, 34, thou shalt put the mercy seat upon the ark of the testimony in the most holy place. And they shall set the table without the veil and the candlesticks over against the table on the south side of the tabernacle toward the south. And they shall put the table on the north side. So you see, not only when the tabernacle was pitched, it had to be pitched in a certain direction. And thou shalt make a hanging.
That's the left axle.
Yeah. And thou shalt make a hanging for the door of the tent of blue, purple, and scarlet, fine twine linen, wrought with needlework. And thou shalt make it for the hanging of the five pillars of shittim wood overlaid with a golden wither hook shall be of gold, and they shall cast five sockets of brass for them. So here in constructing this thing, they had not only had the things for all the things that made this traveling church work inside for sacrifices, but also how it was to be constructed, not only how it was to be constructed, but how it was to be laid out to where it would be pointed in the direction that God wanted it pointed in. And so, you know, and then if you go on and you read on there, which my time is out, but you have the altar for the burnt offerings, and you have the hanging of the courts to where these people could bring their sacrifice to for it to be slaughtered, and all these things. But what Moses received here in 25 and 26 has a bearing on basically on the ninth chapter of the book of Hebrews, because this is the earthly sanctuary and it is a copy of the heavenly pattern.
Yep.
And God would not accept anything less than a true workable pattern. And so when we get into the study next week, and when we read verses 1 through 5, it's going to come right back to you again about these things that we read about in 25 and 26 as to what their uses are and how it was within the plan and purpose for them to use these things even later on. And it was Paul's way of showing them that God was relearning them to the things that Moses had shown them and how it was to be done. And so,
good comparison. I think he felt like to make them understand the new covenant, he had to kind of reteach them the old covenant.
Yeah.
The old way.
The old way of doing
how
things.
How they compared to the new way.
Yeah, in order to show them again, because he's already made the statements early on in Hebrews that you need someone to teach you.
Yep, that's what he was doing.
And so he was doing that. Paul was doing that in Hebrews here to these people, that he was teaching them. And if they didn't know what they were, how they were using it before, then they wouldn't get the gist of what God was expecting them to do now with this new covenant, this new thing. So, you know, it's good sometimes always to go back and to pick it up and to see, you know, what them people went through to make it, to move it around, to give these people the understanding of how much greater and better this new covenant is, in terms of understanding how the old worked and what they had to go through with to do it. Because all this wood, all this linen, all this stuff had to be folded up, had to be took care of, took down, packed away, picked up, and toted from place to place.
It'd be interesting to know how long it actually took them to tear it down and put it up.
I bet they got pretty good.
Oh yeah, they definitely got good. Tony McCurry asked, all this material was borrowed from Egypt when they left for their journey. Otherwise, where could they get it? I think they got the, that's a good question, Tony. I think they probably got the gold and silver. We know where they got it. I don't know how much of the other material.
Yeah, the metal part probably, they didn't do any mining in the wilderness, I don't think, but.
They got that from the Egyptians for sure.
Yeah, but I think as far as the wood goes, see, it wasn't all that far from where they were to the forest part of where Lebanon comes down into or next to the country that they were given.
Yes.
And so I think they could have, gotten it from there, because some of these boards were going to be
massive,
good sized boards. I mean, you couldn't run down the Lowe's and get plywood then, you know.
No.
So, you know, it had to be, you know, all that stuff had to be hewn out and all that stuff.
And God provided, I think, for that.
Yeah.
For the building.
Yeah, but it was.
It
was still an undertaking, you know, at that time. And we think we kind of got it rough now, but we certainly haven't. But that, I wanted to bring it to your attention because, you know, to go back and to look at this, and then go back and read what Paul says about it in chapter 9. We'll give you, he was giving them a lesson and giving us a picture of the things that, maybe we and they both needed to know, in that sense. And, well, thank you for, being with us again, and we'll pick up the study next time and carry on in the 9th chapter of Hebrews, and certainly see what Paul has to say there concerning all these things, because when I looked at it, when I got to making my notes, I said, well, I got to go back and pick this up again, because it's necessary for us to kind of do the same thing, because we've never seen a portable church like that made. And I look back to Mike's study that he had that picture there.
Very good graphic pictures.
And it's
almost 3D.
And it's almost more within it than you can understand, but
a lot going on.
But nevertheless, you can see these divisions on the workings of the going and coming at the front of the thing, and then you realize as you went back toward the Holy of Holies, it got down to one man. with the blood. One man with the blood. And certainly they needed to know that there until it was not needed anymore. Because you see, he says, these things, when I make the new one, it'll get to the point to where you won't have to teach each other anymore. It'll be written in your minds and in your heart. So that was Jeremiah's pickup on it. And then, but you come along with Paul later on. Well, you need to be taught this again, so. Or you need to be reminded of it again anyway. So that's the way that works. God bless you all. Hope you have a good remaining week.